You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Annie, and I've just worked out what I want for Christmas.
What is that?
A long lunch with Kevin Healey.
Well, give him your number.
I don't know how to continue, and please give him my number. I've never met Kevin, but I just really enjoy and learn from each of his contributions.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and, in a drier way, being me, elaborate on some of the issues he's raised. I might just toss in, by the way, that he would be fascinated to know that yesterday the Australian Financial Review, that he calls the Capitalist Review, announced that Gina Rinehart was their business person of the year.
Cal Supri.
So, today, Annie, I'd like to continue with the theme of how things interact with each other.
Go for it.
And this time, riffing off of the discussion we had last time, about the overall shape of the economy, particularly relative to profits and investment, applied to the problem of a rapid green transition that starts the reversal of climate heating brought on by fossil fuel-based capitalism. And this time, however, shifting the focus a little bit about the interaction with the standard of living and wages. And one reason, of course, is that all of us, for better or worse, have been flooded with a wave of economic and ecological data over the last week or two. But along the way, I'm going to toss in a little end-of-year gift for our dear listeners on your wonderful program. My starting point is that, of course, we have now reached the point where the Fair Work Commission announced yesterday its timetable for the annual wage review. And as is usual, the first submissions from all of the different parties, the employer organisations, and of course the ACTU and three or four unions that put in their own submissions is in March. I forget the exact date now, but that's not critical. And I think one of the interesting developments that has not yet gained momentum but ought to is a recent discussion about wages strategy initiated by Godfrey Mose from the United Workers Union. He has published in the Australian version of the American journal Jacobin a really important article about wages strategy, in which he calls for an Australian approach to what he describes wrongly as a new strategy called solidarity bargaining. He's got his history wrong about whether solidarity bargaining is new. It has a deep tradition in Australian unionism, actually, although not always universally supported in the union movement.
So what is it? Go on, tell us. You can have your stoush with Godfrey off air. Come on, tell us what it's about.
What he does really well is show how the multiple enterprise bargaining struggles can be unified into a commonly organised struggle around the annual wage claim of the Australian Council of Trade Unions in the annual wage review.
Oh, that'd be great.
He shows how this could be done by linking it to May Day as the focal point for the escalation of that interweaving of the two types of wages struggle around enterprise bargaining and the annual wage review. And I think it's a terrific discussion, even though he gets the history wrong.
But he's right, though, isn't he?
Yeah. I think he's on the right track. I mean, I just think he is absolutely on the right track. Whether he gets all the detail and the tactics and strategy exactly right is not important, but it's the concept that he's raising especially the Mayday focal point and the interweaving of those two dimensions of wages struggles, that is really terrific.
Well, and of course, the United Workers Union deals with the claims of many, many people who are in a position that to be affected by the wages review.
Yes, yes. Most unions actually have a bigger proportion of their members who are in low incomes. After all, half of the low the median income level of Australia is now 67,000 wages right. Wages income level is $67,000 a year, and most of the Australian working class are at or below that level, and most unions have an increased number of members who are in those lower income groups. So the annual wage review and how it's done is, as I've said for 10 years or so, is a very big deal, and that is not, unfortunately, it's not well understood across our movement. Every union activist listening must read the Godfrey Mose article, and I can send you the link so it can be posted.
I will. Thank you. I'd like that.
Solidarity Breakfast page, but if they Google Jacobin Australia, they'll pick it up. It's in the most recent issue. Now, the context for that, for the annual wage review, is, of course, the overall shape of the economy and also the ecology. The two are linked. And we discussed it, the overall shape of what's going on in the economy last time with reference to investment. And I'll just, before we go further, I'll just toss in that since that time, we have had a new report, Kevin will love this, from the Australian Industry Group and its spokesperson, Innes Wilcox, have that says that they are deeply worried about the level of private investment, private corporation investment in research and development.
Oh, right. Oh, really? After so what, three decades refusing to actually put money into this?
Yes. Now, the rapid transition that is required away from fossils to renewables, you'd think that a priority would be, especially if profits have gone gangbusters, that there would be enough in those in that volume of profits to increase and speed up the rate of investment in research and development on technologies and processes and so on to drive along and create the opportunity for profit-making in the context. But not Australian capital hasn't done that. And this is an indicator of just how cravenly inadequate they are, and also a reminder that the dynamic of the system is more actually than just the general dynamic of the system. Because what this is straight out of the work of the Australian Industry Group by admission. The fall in private business investment in research and development started is the lowest in Australia relative to all of the OECD economies, all of the major economies, United States, Japan, Germany, the United Kingdom, France, Canada, all have higher rates of investment in research and development than Australia. The difference is this, that Australia's fall, reduction in investment in research and development by private business started in the late noughties, around 2008, and accelerated after the LNP government of Abbott and what's his name, the buffoon who went off to the United States, Hockey, and then after him, Turnbull and Morrison. So LNP governments have supervised and permitted the acceleration of the collapse in research and development just when it has been most needed.
That's amazing. That, I mean, it's almost a criminal class, isn't it, really?
That is almost a criminal management of a vital part of our future.
Yeah, I know. It's extraordinary. And then they go around pointing fingers at workers and at government and everybody. It's like they've got a personality disorder collectively.
Well, it's not, sort of. Yeah, I think some of them do, actually. But the real is that these are conscious decisions made by boards and owners and so on. But it's also, it dovetails with the priorities of the system. In other words, wealth accumulation must always minimise its costs. And research and development is defined as a cost, not just as an investment. And there is a dumbness. It is pure capitalist class dumbness, even from their own point of view, that situation has got to where it is. Now, here's something else for Kevin to play with. Who does the Australian industry group blame for all of this? They blame the government. All right? So it's not... This is... They just can't help themselves. That they can't look at their own responsibility. You see, the Australian industry group, as the peak body for a big part of the employers in Australia, ought to be banging the doors down about this amongst their own membership. But no, they
haven't. Well, I'll tell you something for free. That same fellow, Wilcox, Innes, was talking about the most important feature of education in Australia was its it's lowering levels of literacy and numeracy. It's like this tin drum that they keep banging, that, you know, employers keep banging, that Australian workers have got low literacy and numeracy, you know, all the kids at school, you know, and that's the most important thing that they're worried about.
Yeah. Well, it's a separate topic.
No, it's a separate topic, but the point is that it's just that they have mantras. That's my point.
The hollowing out of vocational education.
Yeah.
Because of it's been turned over to private sector providers.
Well, that's the point. This is what I mean. They just refuse to actually involve themselves in solutions. Yeah.
So in terms of their own system, even, they don't get things wrong. They've now got a more inefficient vocational education system, and they've failed themselves in their own system and escalated the danger of climate heating through their failure, for whatever reason, to take research and development seriously. They need to be metaphorically hung, drawn and quartered in the public debate over this. Also, this is where I get to my little gift for everybody, because it's been alphabet soup week, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. In the last week or so, with both COP28 and MyFO, the mid-year economic forecast and all that sort of stuff, all of which is talking about living standards and climate heating, the reversal of that and so on. The new acronym for the economy is, and I'm going to drop it in, it also comes from the Australian Industry Group. It's one of the, it's an actually quite a useful thing they do. It's called the PIM, the PMI, which means the Purchasing Managers Index. Now, this little bit of data is used by lots of corporations and other economic planners, to the extent that there is any, to gauge on what's actually happening generally in the economy. And in brief, the way it works, the AIG uses a survey of a big number of large corporations and other sizes as well, and they get a feedback on how what sort of business activity is going on if the index comes in at 50, then it's all sort of going along okay, but not much. If it's above 50 and further away from 50, then it means that the economy's in a healthy shape from their point of view. If it's below 50, then it's in a poor shape. And the further away from 50 it goes below, the worse it gets. Well, once again, the AIG, with little public discussion or analysis, is reporting that right now, the most recent data is showing it at about 45. It's collapsed. It's the overall shape of the economy on the basis of the actual decision of those who control it in the corporations is in a bad shape and not showing signs of getting better. Now, this dovetails then with some of the more well-known indicators. The Australian National Accounts came out this week, and we get the indications of at least a stagnant economy. Why is this all important? Because this is the context in which we have to, somehow or other, reverse the collapse of green investment. In some way or another, we have to do that. And at the same time, lift the living standards through the most important living standards decision each year is the annual wage review. Somehow or other, in the context of a stagnant economy, we have to win that. And that's what we face, and I think that's what Godfrey Mose has helped us to do.
Righto. All right.
So he helps us to get our heads around that, and I'm saying to all union and union labour movement and environmental activists, is to study that and work out how this interaction occurs between a better standard of living arising from green investment, productive green investment in technology and processes that move us away rapidly from fossil fuel and at the same time raise the standard of living. The two go together. If we don't start winning battles, getting into battle and struggles over the standard of living, the prospects of reversing, of winning the battles around investment policy are diminished. Fitting into that is public ownership. We should be saying, because this is what employers are doing, they want government to replace and provide public dollars into green investment so that they don't have to.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite obvious. They're lazy capitalists, and they're trying to make out that that's the right and proper way of things. But they really, you know, they're actually the new mantra for this capitalist class, and it's worldwide, is that we all have to pay for our own oppression, basically.
Well, that's a rather neat way of putting it. We should be saying, no public dollars without public ownership and greater democratic control over how it is used. In other words, rights for workers and to be able to bargain over the investment decision. That would be a terrific add-on to the quite positive outcomes from the closing loopholes laws that were passed in the last week or so. Another important gain, I think, overall.
Yep, I think so too.
My view, I think the jury's out on whether it's actually going to lead to higher wages, but the annual wage review is far more important on that front than anything else. But nevertheless, it's a very important development, very positive, and I think that adding on to that in the next tranche, that workers ought to have the right to bargain over the investment decision is a way of... another way besides public ownership of ensuring democratic control where it has been absent. Because we know when democratic control is not there, the employers are a failure.
All right. This is a good way to end because we've come to the end.
Very good.
I would like to wish you a happy summer season.
You know what? I do wish that to you and all, but I don't, you know, I'm finding it hard to wish happiness in the context of what's happening with the United States-Israeli alliance invasion of Palestine, the destruction of the attempt to destroy Palestinian life.
Yeah, I know. It's outrageous.
I just can't get enthusiastic about it, I'm sorry. But, yes, you know, we have to remain inspired and cheered and determined that we can win the struggle for peace, not just in the Middle East, but, of course, it's all... There are wars in Africa that are promoted by the United States or assisted by the United States as well, and, of course, massive problems in parts of South America as well.
Yeah, all be able to find their way to the source, which is about greed, capitalism, and resource mining.
We have to get our head around that it's a deeper problem than just greed. And greed is an expression of it, but it's there's something.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's something very tragic about it all.
That's where the alternative program comes from, and that's where peace. We talk about connections, how demands for peaceful relationships between people and nations is an element of that. We should talk about the concept of an alternative program early in the new year.
Thanks for talking to us this year. Thanks for your contribution, Don.
Best wishes to everybody, and thank you for the opportunity, Annie.